Well, we'll go right to work on agenda paper two. Ms. Wu?
So, good morning, everybody. This is agenda paper two. It's about the valuation of biological assets using a regional method. The Interpretations Committee discussed this issue several times and issued a tentative agenda decision back in November 2012. We received three comment letters, and those letters and the staff analysis are included in the staff paper. So in the staff's view, the issue is about the accounting implications when the highest and best use of an asset in a group of assets is different from its current use and overrides the fair value of the biological, overrides the fair value of the group of assets in its current use. We think this issue is too broad for the Interpretations Committee to address because it involves not only biological assets, but also other assets in the scope of other standards. And also we note that the educational material for IFRS 13 and the limited scope project on IS 41 will not address this issue. So the staff's recommendation is the Interpretations Committee should finalize its agenda decision and propose to the ISB that ISB should address this issue. So the question is, does the committee agree with the staff recommendation and the wording for the final agenda decision?
Laurent?
It's more questions. Why isn't the issue going to be addressed in the educational material? Why do we think the issue is too broad? And is it fair to leave our constituents with this issue on hands, which I agree is not just an issue that affects the biological assets? So my question is, what's the plan? Because I read that it's the accounting implications, which we get to, nobody wants to say them or to look at them. But someone will have to face them at some stage.
I had highlighted the same section.
Mm-hmm. Well, okay. The educational material is a non-authoritative.
You were on before.
Thank you. The educational material is a non-authoritative document. And in that specific chapter on the highest and best use, this chapter will provide guidance on the process that an entity will have to follow to determine highest and best use of a non-financial asset. However, here in this specific example, we are seeing implications that are far-reaching than that. And basically, if we go, for example, to the illustrative example, paragraph 8, that is in paragraph 27 of the paper, when we say the accounting implications, what the agenda proposal means is that it's not only what should be the accounting for the land, which is now a highest and best use when used for residential use. But what is the accounting for the factory that is attached to the land? And these are the implications that we see that are far-reaching and that the educational material cannot handle it on its own because it's a non-authoritative document. This is the matter.
Andrew and then Joanna.
Well, I agree with the substance of the agenda decision, not to say it was too broad. I just had two comments on the sort of amended wording. First of all, it quotes investment properties as another example of why things are too broad, and I wouldn't have thought that's the best example because you don't normally separate land and buildings when you're looking at investment properties, and you don't normally have kind of factories in production on investment properties. So it didn't strike me as the best example of how to demonstrate things were broader than that. And the other thing is, I think, is coming to the paragraph we just talked about where we say the ISB but did not fully address the accounting implications of such circumstances. And I think that comment is coming from the wording of BC 73 in paragraph 28 of the paper. And I don't read BC 73 to say we dodged the accounting issue, as it were. I thought BC 73 says that you use highest and best use, but if your highest and best use is not your current use, then you disclose that fact. you might not like the answer because of the problem with valuing the factory, but it, I don't think I read BC 73 to say the accounting is not clear. It's just a disclosure requirement.
Joanna?
I, in principle, I agree, I'm supportive of where we're heading, but I have some questions, and it is around those paragraphs that Andrew's just been talking about, and trying to understand, actually, what IFRS 13 is saying, because I got very confused by the statement that, effectively, the ISB didn't address the accounting, and the where, in fact, that disclosure that actually says, and it comes back to highest and best use. So does the standard say you must use highest and best use? And this was what I was trying to grapple with for the group of assets as a whole, and therefore the factory, if you like, may end up at nil value, or does the standard actually say you've got to do the factory at its existing use? Because the paper, I was very confused by the paper, and I then went back to the standard and got even more confused, and particularly around the IE and the BC paragraphs versus, and I couldn't find this disclosure that it talks about that you've got to disclose it. So, and maybe I'm the only one, but I am seeing a few nods around the table. So I would find it really, really helpful to try to understand. I think it's important for coming to the conclusion in this agenda decision to actually understand that, because I do agree that it is wider than biological assets, that your factory is exactly the same example or exactly the same situation as a biological asset. And therefore, I support the widening of it in some ways, but I think want to understand it because I don't at the moment.
I think the standard is not explicit on what the accounting should be for those other assets that are attached to a land when this land has an alternative use, and this use is a higher and best use than the current one. So it's not explicit what should be the accounting for. And if you follow the example 2 of the land, then you would think, okay, so if the value of the land as a vacant site for residential use is higher than its current use, then you would think, okay, this example leads you to account for this piece of land at its highest and best use, and therefore, what do we do with a factory that is on it? So the standard doesn't say explicitly that probably then the factory should be accounted for as zero or nil, and this is what we are missing, and this is what we think that the educational material cannot go beyond what the standard is not maybe.
So it's not explicit, but I would, because I would read this as actually saying the factory should be at zero, and that's what I would do. And I guess that's my difficulty of how you could actually, because the implication in your paper is that you could actually do it at its value just as a factory as well, and that's what I really couldn't understand, whereas to me, there's no question to me, the factory would be in there at zero.
I mean, in my reading, I 7 and 9 are clear, you know, if you apply the highest and best use properly, the fair value of the land will be nil. But on the other hand, But on the other hand, BC 72, you know, in the BC 72, the ISB admitted, you know, it would not provide useful information, even though there was a discussion at the exposure draft. But that concept is still alive in the standard. That's my reading, because that's why the ISB concluded only the disclosure is required, not the measurement of the factory.
But where does it actually say that only disclosure is required? Yeah, but it's in BC 73, but where in the actual standard does it say that? No. So that's what I was trying to find out, because I read BC 73 and then I went, where's that in the standard?
There's an explicit requirement in the disclosure sections to disclose the event when the highest and best use is different from the current use, and this is explicit and very clear in paragraph 93. The accounting of the non-financial asset at highest and best use is in paragraph 30-something of the standard, but it doesn't probably tell you more than what to do with these other assets that belong to this group that we are measuring together as a group. So this is probably the area where maybe clarity would be needed.
Mariella, just a point of clarification. If we were looking at a situation in which we said, well, the value of the land in its highest and best use is as a vacant lot ready for future development, then we would have to, in computing the fair value, compute the cost of tearing down the building, returning the land, and all of that. So it's not the fair value as if it were already vacant.
Exactly.
Scott, I think you had wanted to get in.
I had the same reading difficulty that Joanna did, and that I don't think IFRS 13 tells me how to value the building in that situation. I actually would have leaned towards valuing the building at its fair value as a building, and not recording it at nil. So I understand why we're thinking that this may be a broader problem. With respect to the issue at hand, I'm fine not addressing it because I think the Bearer Biological Assets Project will take a lot of the pressure off of this question. Beyond that, I'm content to leave it stand. The only thing that gives me a little bit of trouble is that we have in the agricultural literature the specific phrase that you can use this residual method to value the biological assets. We don't have anything similar in IFRS 13 that says you could value the building using a residual method. And I'm not sure which one of those is the better guidance. In other words, I'm not sure if it's better to have the specific statement that you can use the residual method or to be silent on it. But it seems to me that there is a problem that it's inconsistent. Because to say for agricultural assets, it's okay to use a residual method, well, either that's because the residual method is logical in certain situations and you could use it whether you're dealing with agricultural assets or not, or thinking about this, we now think that it's not a good idea to point to the residual method and maybe we ought to take it out of the agricultural literature as well.
Scott, as I remember, before never think about this way.
Yeah, that
we discussed. We may remember. Should you remember?
I don't think we ever discussed the use of the residual method.
Yeah.
In this discussion, there's an implicit underlying theme that, in the case of the land and building, that you're using the residual method. That's why you get the building to nil. But that's, I don't see that in 13 at all. I mean, I agree with Scott. You could read 13 to say value the land in its highest and best use and then go ahead and value the factory, which gets you too much value added together. But I think you could read it that way. And I don't think the board I don't remember this. I agree with Blake. Well, I don't agree with the board ever discussing it.
Andrew, and then Joanna.
I'm
up. You're on now. Oh, I turned it on.
I'm fine.
After all that trouble. Joanna and then John?
Ignore it or accepting the discussion I put before and looking at the proposed agenda decision and where we've got to. I agree with where we are heading. It's that middle or the first underlined paragraph, so the third paragraph, that I think worries me a bit. And I think I would prefer, rather than say did not fully address the accounting implications, because I think that's a worry to say that, is actually to use those words, IFRS 13 is not explicit, or we noted that IFRS 13 is not explicit about how to value, so using those kind of words, and therefore, and then the going on with the conclusion, because I think that links more with the residual value. Yes, 13 doesn't address it, but actually, as you say, do you use it or don't you use it? IFRS 13 is not explicit. And I think if we can say that in that paragraph instead of what is there, then I think this does flow logically. It doesn't necessarily answer the question that people are looking for, but I think it is a wider issue. I don't think we can deal with it just in agriculture, because it is pervasive throughout 13.
John?
I mean, I happen to agree with Scott's interpretation, because I think that paragraph 31B would tell you that if the highest and best use is an alternative use, then you value the asset, that's the unit of account, on it on a standalone basis, and therefore you would get a value for the building. I think the confusion is between that and paragraph 31A3, which seems to imply that you have to be consistent between the assumptions. But 31A3 does say, having said the assumption shall be consistent for all assets, brackets, for which the highest and best use is relevant. The question is the highest and best use relevant for the land if it's not being revalued and only the biological asset or building is being revalued? So I would read those to say that you would value the building on a standalone basis in the situation that we're dealing with. I suppose my view is I think IFRS 13 isn't clear, because I think when you read the IE 7 and 8 and you read BC 72 and you read paragraph 31, and I think it's quite evident from the meetings when we've discussed this that there are completely different views on how these paragraphs apply. So I actually don't think it's clear. I don't agree that with the comment that the board did not fully address the accounting implications. I think that's a bit of a bold statement. It might be better to say did not explicitly address the accounting implications. And I don't like the use of the word overrides, because I'm not sure anything overrides anything else. I think it's just the interaction of the different elements.
Good point. Laurence, and then I had an observation.
When I was reading the agenda rejection, the draft agenda rejection, my view was, okay, if we publish that, this means that we allow various treatments to be applied. But that was the implication of the draft agenda rejection I could read. Same as the others, that sentence about the board did not fully address the accounting implications in such circumstances, I find it not quite good to say. You expect the IASB to assess accounting implication of what it publishes, when it publishes, before it publishes. And again, as I say, this draft agenda rejection does not explain why this issue is too broad. But I acknowledge that the issue is pervasive, that is not just limited to biological assets, we said investment properties, but any time you'll be doing business combination accounting, you'll have that issue. So it is pervasive.
Okay, I'm hearing a general agreement first with the amending of the wording to say it does not explicitly address. I'm also hearing general agreement with saying that the IASB is the only organization that can handle the issue. Is it fair to summarize the issue as set by saying IAS 13 says somewhere that it does not address the unit of account, that the unit of account is left for other standards. Unless the valuation premise does over address the unit of account by saying that you have to value land and building together. And is that the conflict, really, that we want to ask the board to address? That is the unit of account specified by the individual standard and that controls? Or does the valuation premise in 13 always control, even if it imposes a different unit of account?
But I think it explicitly addressed that in paragraph 32. It says the fair value measurement of a non-financial asset assumes that the asset is sold consistent with the unit of account specified in other IFRS. this is the case even when the fair value measurement assumes that the highest and best use is in combination.
So you think it already is dealt with?
That question.
Mariella, would you agree with that?
I would tend to say yes. So I don't think this is, it's always, we have a group of assets that we measure as a group, and it might be in some cases challenging to get to the measurement of individual assets, which we know the unit of account. This is allocation, and it is true in many instances in IFRS 13, allocation has not been addressed, for example, in portfolios. But I'm not sure this is the question that we would like to maybe address to the board for clarification. I think probably John summarized pretty well, which are the lack of clarity between the different paragraphs that he mentioned in the standard. I think that's the key thing, how to interpret the consequences of these different paragraphs all together when we have to assess highest and best use and the implications.
All right, I'll buy that. Charlotte, are you through?
And the only thing I wanted, in my view, is it's a question that you don't have to be consistent between how you value certain assets. If assets are used in combination, that might be the highest and best value used for the overall combination, but it's not necessarily the highest and best use for individual assets. Simply, if it was amended to say they have to be consistent, that would make more sense.
If that's what they want to do. Scott?
I was going to say roughly the same thing as Charlotte, that I thought paragraph 32 answers the question about unit of account. And I thought both boards, the FASB and the IASB, when dealing with this, acknowledged the problem that from a valuation perspective, you might value things as a group because that's the highest and best use for the group. But I thought the boards made a conscious decision that in a fair value measurement standard, we are not going to change the unit of account. And therefore, because other standards say we have to account for land and we have to account for building, we cannot change that in a measurement standard and say account for them together in some way.
Well, I thought so too. And that would have been my reading, but some of our previous conversations seem to have suggested that the valuation premise somehow overrides that. I just wanted to be clear. But if that's clear, I'm tickled pink. That's fine.
Well, can I add? I fully agree with you. Last month, the board made decision based on the staff proposal on leasing, or 2 months ago, you know, specifically said under what kind of conditions the building and the land you lease should be measured, accounted together, and under what conditions you should value and recognize separately. You know, this is a good example, you know. Not always the case. You have land, a building nearby, or you should value together, and the unit account will be specified in a particular standard. As whether people agree or not, there's another story. But more board made decision. But you're right.
John, can you re-summarize for me? Since several people have said John did a good job here.
Well, I can summarize my own thoughts, but I'm not sure I can summarize the thoughts of everybody else. I think that when the highest and best use of the asset is in combination with other assets, when the highest and best use is an alternative use, I think that the asset that you're measuring, you actually determine its highest and best use on a standalone basis. So I think I read paragraph 31B as telling you that you determine the highest and best use on a standalone basis. I think what's unclear to me, though, or I think what's unclear to people is paragraph 31A3, which says that the assumptions about the highest and best use of a non-financial asset shall be consistent for all assets, brackets, for which the highest and best use is relevant, of the group of assets or the group of assets and liabilities within which the asset would be used. So the question is, if you're fair valuing the land and the building and they're separate units of account, I think it would be inappropriate to end up with different assumptions, so you end up with fair values for the land and the buildings that are that are above what the combined fair value would be. But to me, if you're valuing the, if the land is measured at cost, then actually the highest and best use of the land is not relevant to the highest and best use of the building, and you may actually value the building on a standalone basis. And therefore, so in the biological asset example, to me, if I was carrying the land at cost and the biological assets are at fair value, I think if the highest and best use was to the land was to redevelop it, I still think you'd value the biological asset on a standalone basis under paragraph 31 of IFRS 13. But I do think that it's not, I don't think it's clear.
Yeah.
And I don't think it's clear when you read this and read BC 72 and read the illustrative examples.
Michael? Can I just check something from about my understanding of what you just described? So does that mean that if the land was on a fair value basis, that we would then have a different result for the measurement of the building or the biological asset? So I just recall that's something that we had in our very first paper. Yes. And I know that we received comments on that saying, no, that doesn't make sense. The accounting policy should not change the valuation of the asset.
Well, I think 31A3 would apply because it says the assumptions about the highest and best use of a non-financial asset shall be consistent for all assets, brackets, for which the highest and best use is relevant. If both the land and the biological asset are at fair value, then highest and best use is relevant for all the assets in that combination, and therefore they would have to be consistent. That's how I read 31A3.
Okay, that's what we will then take to the board. Any objections?
We think that's the correct interpretation, or we think that's a...
No, I think we're taking the board that they need to clarify what they think.
Right, okay, excuse me.
Because I think when last we talked about this, the committee was split right down the middle as to what they thought the correct interpretation was.
I just wouldn't agree with that, so...
You have what you need?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay, Denise, moving now to paper 3.